Asshole Cord is a bi-weekly podcast in which a group of lifelong friends choose a controversial public figure and examine their history through available public records and various publications to determine if that person is as much of an asshole as the general public suspects.
We rate the subjects on a not-so-scientific scale, ranging from Mr. Rogers to Hitler, 1 to 11, and average out the three scores in the end for our final number.
Just a reminder, our judgment has no legal weight, is strictly an opinion, and is subject to change at any time, especially in the case of new evidence. It shouldn't be taken seriously, so just don't.
Society as a whole has seen the impact of influencing well before Instagram and TikTok models infiltrated our world with selfies, shameless product promotion, and statements that always seem to be in the form of a question. Many people had influence over the public before TikTok? One of those folks and the subject of our show today worked in a time that saw the transition of old school formats turned into new platforms and the radio industry as a whole see major changes. Howard Stern has been the biggest name in radio for nearly 30 years, and the power he has held over his audiences can be measured by the absolute piles of money the Big Bird lookalike has made. Taking the term shock jock to a new level, Stern danced around the line daily with the FCC, all to the delight of his millions of syndicated fans and radio station owners all over the country. He has the most famous, popular people of their time on his show, and depending on their willingness to play along, lots of memorable moments have been made. But there are some moments that have also been very cringeworthy, and Stern seems to be dancing around the hashtag canceled line as well. But it seems as though they can't quite kill the self-proclaimed king of media, no matter how far he goes. But with all the moments that have made the show famous, what kind of collateral damage have we seen? Does the king of media have the power to influence people's decisions to a life-altering degree? Is Howard going to physically transform into a hipster skeleton like his arch nemesis Don Imus? Grab your headphones and your 7-second dump button as we dive into the Howard Stern episode of
Asshole Court.
All right, we had two people suggest this show, both some of our favorite fans that we like to interact with. The first was from our friend Fancy Important Man.
Oh yeah, Fancy's
From Reddit, absolutely. Yeah,
Fancy's is everywhere.
He is everywhere.
That's right.
He is. And the second was from our friend Ryan, aka Jubaka90 from Instagram.
All right,
oh,
Jubaka.
Nice,
absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah, Jubaka with the second one.
We had two more requests for this show.
A lot of Howard Stern
a lot of
people.
Howard
huh?
Sterns. Recently, just on our update show on Instagram, in the comments, we had Gary King of Scots request Howard Stern, along with a couple others.
We just talked about Mary Queen of Scots getting her head cut off in the last episode.
That's right.
So
that's
Gary
right.
King of Scots, very cool.
But that was on Patreon, wasn't it?
No.
No?
That was in the John Law episode.
Oh, yeah, the John Law episode. Okay. And then also the Stacey Moe Show also said that Howard Stern would be a great one, too. So.
All right. Okay. Stacey Moe, good call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how good your show is, but I'm sure it's great.
Oh, absolutely. So, again, thank you, as always, for your suggestions, and keep them coming, everybody. So, next, we're going to, from the inbox, I got some mail here from us.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. These are actually some fun comments that I printed. Just kidding. I'm going to read them here on my iPad.
Okay.
on a few of our shows lately, and I'm not sure where the whole, like, let's jack off to your show thing has started, but it has.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's like gaining momentum.
Yeah, this one came to us from M-A-N-I-E.
That's the same guy.
Yeah,
same guy. Same guy from the last one.
Uh-huh. On Spotify,
that's
he says,
right.
Cranked my hog to the pronunciation of my name.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which I obviously missed.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, because he recommended the show, the previous show.
No, he told us straight up that he cranked his hog to the show, and we talked about it.
Yep.
And I was like, yes, cranking your hog is the most aggressive euphemism for masturbating.
And he said,
big
he,
fan of it.
He cranked my hog to the pronunciation of my name.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It is a the fad sweeping the nation, cranking your hog.
That's right.
To our show.
And then on the Hugh Hefner show, we talked about a comment that was left for us by from Benny in regards to the Tulsa QT jokes.
Yes.
And our friend Manny, again, replied to that comment. He said, up cranking my hog to this.
Okay.
Again, he's a hog cranker.
He's going with it. It's like the Shepherd Fairey with the Obey stickers he just put all over the world and made it a brand. That's going to be the Manny, heart, whatever it is. Cranking my hog to this is just, it's how it's going to roll. I love it.
Or he could be, like an artist, and that's his new song.
That's his new, yeah.
Cranking My Hog.
It's just he's working on, it's memetics, man. You just got to just go out there and say, cranking my hog to this enough, and somebody's going to be like, you know what? That's a catchy phrase.
It's kind of like Snoop Dogg. We kind of start
for
saying
shizzle.
Biatch and
Biatch
for
and for shizzle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's it.
He made those words.
He did.
Yeah.
That's right. And
straight
that's what
up.
That's
yeah.
what Manny's doing. You know, no matter what happens, just say you cranked your hog to it.
Yep. Yeah, I remember, what was it? Lil Wayne was talking about how he wished that back in the day he had, like, copyrighted a lot of
Bling Bling.
Bling Bling.
Bling Bling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if Snoop copyrighted all the...
I don't know.
For shit. Well, you can't really... You add the izzle to everything at the end.
That's
so
right. You can't.
It's not just one word.
But biatch would be... Can you imagine seeing the trademark paperwork for biatch? You know what I mean? Like, the fucking... Awesome. The clerk is like, biatch... From Calvin Broadus. Approved.
Yo, this is cool.
Yeah.
This is cool. I know who he is.
Yeah, yeah, Calvin. And then I guess we had some other comment here that we're going to get to. Going way back in the day to our old Alex Jones show, and we were talking about, prior to this show, Alex Jones decided it was a good idea for some reason to tweet out a picture of his own face like it was an Olin Mills sort of professional photography thing with a text box next to it where he quoted himself, and the quote was, "I will eat your leftist ass."
That's it.
And of course the internet has just been having a field day, changing it to just "I eat ass" to
"eat your ass."
Yeah. And Alex Jones, I know when he did that, he thought like, this shit sounds tough as fuck. And everybody instead is just kind of like, I'm not surprised that you're an ass eater.
You eat ass for breakfast?
Yeah. I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. I always also believe that there should have been a movie about Shooter McGavin. That should have been a spinoff.
Oh, man. Hell yeah.
A Shooter McGavin movie?
That would have been awesome.
It would have been incredible. It's still a little too late now because what's his name is so old. But maybe put him on the senior PGA tour. I would awesome. Watch a Shooter McGavin movie.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to start writing that right now.
All right. So we had Invisible Patriot.
Oh, I already hate the name.
Oh, man. Here we go.
You can already tell he's a true American.
Yes, on the Alex Jones episode, put, now do one on all the douchebags that claim 9/11 was a conspiracy, .. No, hypocrite.
What? Yeah, no, we just haven't had time. We'll do that one. We've talked about this before. I don't understand. That's a very strange comment, Invisible yeah. Patriot. But I will say this. I don't believe that 9/11 was an inside job. And we will eventually do that show. It's just that it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a long
yeah,
show.
Yeah, it's a that's really long
be,
show.
It's
and we
like
have
a two-episode conspiracy court show at least.
Exactly. And I don't have like...
And if you subscribe to our conspiracy court at
right.
$10 level, Invisible Patriot, we'll consider it. How's that?
Yeah, do
oh,
that.
Oh, there we go. I like that, Randy. Yeah.
And I want a fucking apology.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't give a shit what you think.
Awesome. All right. We're going to close the box. There it goes. All right. Put that away.
We need to get a soundboard. So that way, because I feel like that we're going with that shock jock vibe tonight. We really need that extra ooga.
Oh, I'll add those in post, guys.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice, nice. All right, boys, let's get some pre-show scores for Howard Stern. Buddy, kick us off. What you got? Pre-show for Howard Stern.
All right, Howard Stern. Now, you know, I've been watching or listening to Howard Stern for a long time, but I've never really paid attention to him. You know, you see clips of him all the time, but I've never really enjoyed his show for the most part.
Yeah,
I laugh at some of the jokes that he makes, but I've also been repulsed by some of the jokes that he makes. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Howard Stern fan at the end of the day. I did like Fart Man.
I mean,
how could you not?
Exactly.
Yeah. How could you not?
Yeah.
He almost is, you know, one of the original, I guess, was there Shock Jocks before him?
There's, yeah, but he sort of was the
made
cutting
it,
edge. Yeah,
yeah, made it what it is.
I think so.
Yeah. So, and you know us. I mean, we love a crude joke on this show, but sometimes I just think that he takes it too far.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we're going to get into that over the course of the show.
There are literally thousands of people listening right now that are going, I think that about you guys.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I know. And, you know, because
they told us that many times in our comments. Yeah.
You know, my own father.
You know, but we will at least be like, all right, now seriously.
Yeah.
Where I feel like Howard never does that. Like, he'll just keep on hitting that same joke for like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, I just kind of get tired of it at the end of the day. So for me, I'm going to keep it short and sweet because we'll discuss a lot of this throughout the course of the show. But I'm seeing a parallel between him and Axl Rose. So I'm going to start off a little bit high, and I'm going to give Howard Stern a 6.92 off the rip. And we'll see where he lands by the end of the show.
All right, 6.92 pre-show for Buddy. Mikey, what you got for Howard Stern pre-show?
Yeah, I never really got into Howard Stern either. It's funny because I watched the movie Private Parts and actually liked it a lot. It was kind of, I mean, it's been a long time since I watched it, but I don't think I've ever listened to an entire one of his shows. And like Buddy was talking about, like you hear clips and stuff like that, and it tends to be a lot of pointed questions about people's personal sexual behavior while they're sitting there, and it makes me incredibly uncomfortable. Whereas, yes, like, we'll make jokes about Mama June's ass eating, all that stuff like that. We went on for a while about that one. But if Mama June was sitting here right now, I wouldn't have the audacity to be like, so do you like getting your ass eaten?
And then I'm going to write Randy a check right now.
yeah. But he does it. He does it in all the shows.
Yeah, if we had George Washington here, we wouldn't be talking about butt plugs across the Delaware.
We might.
Man, I mean, it'd be a corpse. I think we'd have other problems there.
Or if he like was like a legit like zombie president and had social or secret service outside the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of carried a presence.
Or asking Ron Jeremy if he wouldn't mind sucking his own dick for us just so we could see the mechanics of it. I wouldn't do it. So I'm going to get to the point as well. I don't think Howard Stern is a bad person, honestly. I think he plays a sort of, nasty pervert kind of douche guy to just sort of push the show. But I could be totally wrong about that. I'm going to hit him up with a 5.25.
All right. 5.25 for Mikey.
Randy, what do you got?
You hit it well early on, buddy. I listened, you kind of see Howard Stern in the news all the time, but I never really listened to his show.
Yeah.
But, you know, the older he's gotten, it feels like the kind of weirder he's gotten, but that happens a lot with a lot of people.
Yeah. Of course.
But, yeah, in terms of, like, details, you only see, again, when you see the clips, you can only assume the worst. And to Buddy's point, I mean, I don't get offended, but a lot of it is, like, man, just kind of fucked up questions.
Yeah.
You know, regardless, it's sexual. It's, like, very personal.
Yeah.
We'll get into a lot of that. But it really is what made him who he is. You know what I mean? He kind of did it in every market and brought this fantastic craziness to his shows. And people love it, you know?
He popularized the shock jock, and it's so wild to think about it. That was the standard format in every major city in the mornings for, like, 15 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Every city had their own version of this, right? Yeah. Like, we had the regular guys in Atlanta. And
they were hilarious.
They had some good stuff. Oh, yeah. They all did their own thing, but it was a lot of the soundboard, like, you know, whatever, like fake calls in, shit like that. And
Petite Tone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's wild how influential he was, and how it's sort of the same way I think about, like, payphones. You just, one day you realize they're like, that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Yeah. You don't hear those shock jocks anymore.
Yeah. So, honestly, pre-show, I've got him right at 6.1 is where I had him, actually right between you guys. So, pre-show, got him right around the level of a Mike Lindell, MyPillow, or a Kanye West.
Ooh, I like it. Original Kanye West.
Original Kanye West.
Yes. Yeah, not Nazi.
Pre-Nazi.
Yeah, pre-Nazi.
Nazi.
Yeah, not Nazi.
All right. With a 6.92 from Buddy, a 5.25 from Mikey, and a 6.1 from Randy, Howard Stern's pre-show asshole score is a 6.09.
All right, 6.09 puts him in interesting territory. We have a fun pair at 6.08. We have Adam Newman from WeWork fame.
That's right.
And Dwayne the Dog Chapman of Dog the Bounty Hunter fame, both at 6.08.
That's a weird pairing right
there. Yeah, they're fun, right?
They both have shitty haircuts. Yeah.
And then, Howard Stern, 6.09. And then Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, at 6.1.
Yeah, right
in that area.
I was like, they all have long, shitty hair. And then Mike Lindell.
He has no hair.
He's got good hair for his
haircut.
Age.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very impressive head of hair.
Yeah, it's very beaver cleaverish. But
it is, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
There's a lot to work with there.
That's
exactly
right. All right, boys, you ready to cut it up?
Yeah.
Let's get some farting going on.
Howard Alan Stern was born on January 12, 1954, as the second child of Ben and Ray Stern. Yes, his mother went by Ray.
Ray? R-A-Y?
R-A-Y.
Shouldn't even fuck around with it. It wasn't even like R-A-I.
Like the guy you borrowed a lawnmower from.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Ray.
Yeah.
He was born in the Jackson Heights neighborhood of Queens, New York, but about a year later, his family moved further east on Long Island to Roosevelt, New York, where Stern grew up. As you can imagine, a lot of the elements of Stern's upbringing shaped not only his behavior, but also how he chose his craft. Howard has an older sister named Ellen that he describes as the complete opposite of him, but his father, Ben, worked as a radio engineer at WHOM in Manhattan and as a co-owner and operator at R Recording Incorporated.
W-H-O-M?
W-H-O-M.
M, like whom?
Well, like, whom?
That's whom in
whom
Manhattan.
Is it? It's Howard Stern and just, Ray Stern.
That's right. Or Ben.
Ben and Ray.
Ben and Ray, yep.
Imagine getting the wedding invitation for that, but you don't know.
Yeah.
Ray, you're like, I'm pretty sure gay marriage is going to be legal for like 60 years.
Just put me down for the steak.
Yeah. So, yeah, he worked at Aura Recording, Inc. It was a co-owner of Aura Recording, Inc., a Manhattan recording studio where cartoons and commercials were cut. By the age of 5, young Howard was already showing interest in radio. His father set up a microphone, tape machine, and turntable in the basement of his home, which Stern used to record his make-believe radio shows incorporating different characters and pre-recorded prank calls, sketches, and commercials.
Okay, I thought you were going to be like, he was really into radio, and I was like, so was fucking, like, oh, I was into TV.
Yeah.
But then actually he did. Yeah, every kid. Yeah.
I know, we were makeshift radio guys, like, trying to run up and record the cassette right at the right time that your favorite song was playing back in
Boys
the
90s. Boys and Men, it's on! They hit the play! And then, they would always come in and they would interrupt the fucking song at the end. Back
at the end
there.
Of it,
remember
yep.
that? Be like, all right, that yeah. was On Bended Knee by Boys the Men.
He made several visits to his father's recording studio, witnessed some of the great voice guys doing work with him, which began his desire to be on the air and do a show rather than play records. But it wasn't all wax and stacks with the best on racks. Howard's parents were not only heavily practicing Jewish people, but they were hippies.
Huh.
For a while when he was young, Howard attended Hebrew school, and while attending, he was given a Hebrew name, Sevi.
Sevi. Shalom. Sevi?
T-Z-V-I.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Sevi. That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah.
I think I'm right.
Tsetse fly.
That's
Sevi.
Right.
Yeah.
Sevi, yeah. So Howard had a Hebrew name.
That's not surprising at all.
Yeah. Not at all, yeah. But the neighborhood that the Sterns lived in would be the first of many Long Island towns to go through a period of what's known in the real estate world as blockbusting, in which real estate agents convinced white property owners that a growing minority population would ultimately devalue their property and to sell at a loss. Stern's parents, both staunch liberals, refused to move on philosophical grounds and soon found themselves among the few white families remaining in Roosevelt. Stern was frequently subjected to racial hazing and violence and came to dread leaving his house.
That's he's like, this is what your liberalism got.
Yeah.
You got me this black eye, ma.
Thanks, Ray.
Equality. I got fucking punched in both my eyes today.
An annual summer gig as a camp counselor became a much sought after escape. From the age of 9 to his second year in college, Stern spent his summers at Camp Wellmet, a youth camp in Narrowsburg, New York, where he worked as a camper, kitchen, and counselor duties. He recalled his time there as the greatest experience. But as far as Roosevelt went, Stern said, I grew up here, but I really blocked it out. I call it a house of horrors. This town was a horrible place to live. It was a nightmare. But let's be honest, his hobbies probably had a little to do with him getting picked on as well. As a youngster, Stern took 5 years of piano lessons and found an interest in marionettes, using them to entertain his friends with explicit shows.
What? At least it was explicit shows.
They were explicit, but yeah, he played the piano and played puppets.
Yeah. I told you guys about that one girl that I, she took me back to her apartment, and she worked for the Center for Puppetry Arts.
Oh, this is awesome.
In Atlanta.
No, I don't remember this story.
Yeah. We were working. I was like bartending at the time. I don't remember how it all went down, but went back to her house, and then she was telling me about...
Yeah, tell us more about how it went down.
She was telling me about that she worked for the Center for Puppetry Arts, and I was kind of like...
Which is a big puppet center in Atlanta.
The number one.
Yeah.
So you go to her house, you know, I'm trying to get a couple drinks in me to, like, settle down. She won't stop talking about puppets, and she's got puppets in her house, or in her apartment, rather. And I just remember being like, I'm getting the fuck out of here in the morning.
Yeah.
Never talk to her again.
To bail quickly.
Yeah, it was strange. I was like, that's so weird to really be into puppets. Yeah. Like, that was like her existence. I was like, very, very odd.
It's cool to do it, but I mean, if you can't stop talking about it.
If that's your thing, man. Like,
you went and found a job at the Center for Puppetry Arts, and you don't make enough money to where you're having to pick up shifts. Like, she was like picking up, you know, beer bottles and shit. It was strange. Anyway.
It takes a certain individual.
Yes. I was not in that world, man.
That's right. Howard attended Roosevelt Junior and Senior High School, and he and a couple buddies started a band named the Electric Comic Book. Howard put to use those years of piano lessons and fingered the ivories, playing the keyboard and backing up on vocals.
The name of the band was, what was it?
Electric Comic Book.
Okay, that's a bad name. It's horrible.
It's a terrible name. In June 1969, the family moved to nearby Rockville Center, and Stern, at age 15, transferred to Southside High School, where he became a total introvert, he claims. He graduated from the school in 1972. His yearbook lists Stern's sole student activity as a member of the Key Club, which is part of the Kiwanis International. So it's like leadership through action is like their...
Oh, well, he seems like a prime candidate.
I had to click on it and see exactly what...
Hey, who's going to be a great leader? The real quiet one that doesn't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So this was different than the Hugh Hefner Playboy Club.
The Key Club.
Key Club.
Yes, way different than that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been a little cooler. But I can't even... Why would he even go... It's like really, he's like going to like the Toastmasters or whatever. You're like, dude, you can't even talk to the lady sitting next to you, man, much less the whole audience.
In 1972, Stern declined a place at Elmira College to instead pursue a communications degree at Boston University. But his average high school grades caused him to spend the first 2 years in his College of Basic Studies.
College of Basic Studies?
College of Basic Studies at Boston University.
So that's like remedial school?
Sounded that way. In his second year, he started work on the campus radio station WTBU. Along with several other students, he created an on-air show called the King Schmaltz Bagel Hour.
I like
a takeoff
the
of the popular King Biscuit Flour Hour.
Okay. Okay. King Schmaltz
Bagel Hour. Yep. Predicting his penchant for controversy, the show was canceled after its first broadcast, which included the comedy sketch Name That Sin, a game where contestants confess their worst sins, and a racial sketch named Godzilla Goes to Harlem.
Well, that first part was a real winner.
Yeah.
Second part, you're just not going to go over real well.
Yeah, it didn't.
I had a longer radio or college radio career than Howard Stern did.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And look,
you did?
Yeah, I had the college radio show, the Fatty Show, on Monday afternoons.
Look how it's played out. Now you're a monster podcaster, and Howard Stern is selling cars.
That's exactly right. Stern graduated in 1976 with a 3.8 grade point average with a bachelor's degree in communications. During his first playing radio gig at an understaffed 3,000-watt station in Briarcliff Manor, New York, it dawned on me that I would never make it as a straight DJ, Stern told James Cunin in an interview for People magazine. So I started to mess around. It was unheard of to mix talking on the phone with playing music. It was outrageous. It was blasphemy. He was unsure of his talent and questioned his future as a professional in the industry. He wrote, I freaked out. I got real nervous that I wasn't good enough. And then he took a job at a marketing firm called Benton & Bowles. It was a New York advertising agency, which he said he soon quit without giving notice in favor of a position in the creative department, which makes kind of sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
He lasted 3 hours before he was fired because they realized that I was the guy who just quit. Yeah.
Yeah. How does that work? Well, it was a different time.
Kinda like that. Stern then worked in Queens as a radio salesman selling advertisement time without considerable success. He wrote, all of a sudden, I realized I had turned down a job in radio. With encouragement from his mother and girlfriend, Stern contacted WRNW for work and agreed to take shifts surrounding the Christmas holidays of 1976. Impressed with his reliability and professional approach, the station's director hired Stern full-time for a four-hour midday shift for 6 days a week for $96 a week.
Okay. But think about this. Think about that you could call a radio station and be like, I'll work the Christmas shift. They're like, bring them on in.
Come on.
You couldn't do that. You could even, like, nowadays, if you even send a resume somewhere, you have to know the algorithm.
Oh, yeah.
You can figure it out. That was, like, literally back in the day, they were just like, yeah, I don't know, give the kid a shot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I even remember back in the 90s here around in Atlanta, we would call into, like, the radio shows and actually talk to the hosts.
Oh, yeah.
That were hosting the shows.
Talent,
like, the
on-air
answer. Talent. Yeah. Like, they were answering the phones in between on the commercials and stuff.
I did that as recently as 2014. There used to be a guy at an AM talk show, and he was a hardcore right winger, big shocker, right? Dumb as rocks. The dude was dumb, and I could call and reliably get in. I think I talked to him like 4 or 5 times, and he would always get so flustered and hang up on me, and I just would sit there and like just stewing in my own self satisfaction.
Nice.
You know? You fucking idiot.
And another one.
Yeah.
That's right. After several months, Stern became the station's production director, which lasted until November of 77, when he became its program director for an increased salary of $250 a week. So where he called and got a job a year before, a year later, November of 77, he was the fucking program director at the radio station.
With 150% pay increase.
Yeah.
So
to save money, Stern rented a room in a monastery in Armonk, New York. Now, could you imagine Howard Stern hanging out with a bunch of monks?
I can.
There was a monastery behind my neighborhood growing up.
That's right.
Pretty interesting place.
Yep.
They were the largest landowners in the county. The property was like thousands and thousands of acres.
That's right. Those monks just get drunk, dude.
It was wild. We would go back there, and they kind of patrolled. It was these huge fields where they would bale hay.
Yeah.
And they patrolled their property.
Yeah.
And
what else are you going to do?
On four-wheelers.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow. On four-wheelers. So we'd
because they were like Franciscan monks from what I remember. They wore brown robes.
Brown robes.
So homies in brown robes rolling up on like
on
a Honda.
Four-wheelers. Yep.
I love it.
Absolutely.
How did I not remember that? Holy shit.
They chased us off a couple times back then. Yeah. Yep.
So monks on four-wheelers, I feel like we could make a show called like Monk Hunks. You know what I mean? Something like that. Like they're just like living their best lives. They're gay as shit. You know what I'm saying? Because that's like the whole premise. They're like, look, how do I go about my life being able to just fuck dudes, chill, drink beer, and like rip four-wheelers and not have to go to Tiger King's property?
Monk Hunks.
And Monk Hunks is what it is.
Yeah, there you go.
Monk Hunks on Monk. USA Network.
That's it. Stern bounced around a few different radio stations in the late 70s and began to make a name for himself with the beginning of his shock jock antics. One such stunt came during the summer of the 1979 energy crisis. Stern urged listeners to a two-day boycott of Shell Oil Company, garnering him and the station lots of media attention. Howard started a job in Detroit Rock City, taking an offer from a struggling radio station, and this gig really put his name on the map in terms of his peers. He won a Billboard Award for Album-Oriented Rock Personality of the Year for a major market, as well as some other accolades, setting him up to finally make some significant money.
Can you imagine getting that award? Album-Oriented Talk Personality of the Year. It sounds so
for
fucking convoluted.
Market,
yeah.
Best score in a children's documentary about...
3 minutes or less. Yeah, with an oboe.
However, the ratings at the station were still tanking, and overnight they switched to playing country music. Stern said he lasted another 2 weeks before it was time to hit the road again. Somehow I couldn't see myself as a hop-along Howie. He declined offers to work at WXRT in Chicago and CHUM in Toronto, Canada. Chum. That's right.
That's it. Whom and Chum.
With the help of his agent, Stern found his next job hosting mornings at a rock station, WWDC in Washington, D.C. Stern was cautious about the offer at first as the general manager wasn't really aware of what I did. But he accepted the offer and started on March 2nd, 1981. During this time, relocating from Detroit, Stern spent several weeks planning out a new show, determined to make more successful as the station presented a good chance for him to work in New York City, which is his career goal. He was determined to kill my competition. I was going to say whatever the fuck I was going to say. The first step was to put my team together. He sought out a co-host with a sense of humor to riff on news and current events. The station then paired Stern with Robin Quivers, a former nurse in the Air Force and Baltimore news reporter. Quivers was sent a tape of Stern interviewing a prostitute on the air, and she accepted the job without meeting him. She assumed she would, come in and do the news, but it wasn't that way. Despite several issues management had over content, which led to the installation of the 7-second delay to censor questionable moments, Stern kept chipping away at the management's archaic approach, and we began to assemble the program I'd envisioned.
So he's responsible for the 7-second delay?
They brought in one.
I don't think he was responsible for it, but they used it a lot on him.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid thinking that you could just call into shows and be like, suck a dick!
And then get like most of it off, but you get some on.
Yeah.
That's why you see some like live reporters like on the side of the street, and they're like the most famous one is like a... fuck him in the pussy. Yeah. Or fuck me in the pussy. And they come running by and saying it.
Yeah. I remember when that was a big thing, and I just, that bothered me for some reason. I was kind of like, that just sounds.
Yeah, NFL quarterback Jameis Winston jumped on a lunch table at Florida State University and said, fuck him in the pussy.
Yeah. Oh, that was where it started, huh?
No, that was where he got it, was from that guy.
Yes.
It was viral, and he decided to.
He got in a little bit of shit for that.
Yeah, he
it just felt a little too crude for me, to be honest.
I hear you, Mikey.
It did.
Mikey's got a line.
Yeah.
That's it.
That was it.
Yeah.
In January 1982, Stern had the second highest rating morning show. In one incident, though, he revealed his wife had a miscarriage on the air.
Yeah, this was in the movie.
Yep. Impressed with his rapid rise in the ratings, WWDC management offered Stern an initial one-year extension to his contract, but Stern was looking for a more long-term deal. At the same time, he was offered a five-year deal worth $1 million to work afternoons at WNBC in New York City, then an adult contemporary station, after the manager there had become a fan of Stern and suggested his name to the station.
So what year was this?
Early 80s?
82.
$1 million contract?
$1 million contract.
For the entirety of the 5 years or just per year?
So that's 200 grand a year.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. That's crazy money.
And it's also like in an adult contemporary, they're like, all right, well, that was Phil Collins. And now here's Howard Stern talking about his wife's miscarriage.
Yeah.
Which was one of the better parts of that movie, honestly. She was really upset. And he was like, what is it? He was like, it's just a little chunk of goo. Who cares? Oh. I was like, damn, son.
Stern signed with WNBC in March of 82, 4 months before his contract with WWDC was to expire. His relationship with station management declined from then on, and he repeatedly criticized them and other DJs on the air, including an incident where he revealed the manager's salary.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Over too well. Move.
What was it?
They didn't say.
Damn, yeah. I just want to know now. It's one of those things. You want to hear everybody's dirtiest secrets,
right?
And know everybody's salary. Yeah.
The situation culminated on June 25th, 1982, when Stern was terminated from the station. Towards the end of his stay, Stern had more than tripled his ratings since he began. The Washingtonian named him the city's best disc jockey. It was often believed that Stern was suspended over a controversial bit regarding the 1982 crash of Air Florida Flight 90 that made people believe he had called the airline and asked for prices to the 14th Street Bridge, the site of the crash, and if it would be a regular stop for them.
That's...
Yeah, he was asking for a one-way ticket over there to the 14th Street Bridge, like the day after it happened.
Stern said it was
too
false.
Soon there, Howie.
Yeah, yeah, Stern said it was false and that no one ever complained about it. So he did say it, but he's saying nobody complained about it. That's not why he got fired.
And I think that's going to be a common thing with him, and why I think he's an asshole is because he's always too soon with everything.
Push the envelope.
Like the day after stuff happens, he's pushing the envelope. And I'm like, let's wait a week
or two.
It's
funny how that stuff plays out too, though. But do you remember Gilbert Gottfried's roast of Hugh Hefner?
No, but
it was like the weekend after 9/11, and he got on stage, immediately dropped a 9/11 joke, and everybody was like, boo!
Boo this
yeah,
man!
Yeah, it was, I was like, but now it's like legendary. They're like, he went out there and dropped a 9/11 joke on like 9/14.
Damn.
It was the first 9/11 joke ever told.
It took guts!
Oh, it's awesome, Randy.
Stern began his afternoon show at WNBC in August of 82 and was closely monitored, instructed to avoid discussions of a sexual or religious nature. In his first month, he was suspended for Virgin Mary Kong, a sketch about a video game where a group of men pursued the Virgin Mary around a singles bar in Jerusalem.
I mean, I don't even understand how you build that premise, but...
I mean, think of the things that we talk about.
That's true.
Off
it's true.
Off air here. Yeah.
We just got into one, like, literally 5 minutes.
The correct way to do the shocker. We may actually put out a pamphlet.
Yeah, but our writer's room definitely sees stuff that,
would rival
that kind of stuff.
Well, it's not even, it's like offensive. But when he's, I guess it was because it was like Donkey Kong or something like that.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was also the time, too.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not criticizing the joke. I'm just trying to think of, like, how, I just always imagine how these jokes sort of originate in someone's head. You want to hear, like, how that whole conversation went. And he was like, I got it.
Yeah. The station then hired an attorney to operate the 7-second delay if Stern said something potentially offensive. This soon became the task of program director Kevin Matheny, who Stern infamously feuded with and named Pig Virus. While at WNBC, Stern also began his longtime feud with its morning host, Don Imus.
Oh, but Don Imus was on there with Howard Stern?
Yeah. I think, no, he was
same
on the
station.
No.
Same station. Okay.
I don't remember, but.
Yeah, we were like 3 or 4.
He was at WNBC, and I think Imus was at the other station.
Got it. Probably. Got it. That seems reasonable, though. You want to sort of build up a sort of rivalry, I think.
A feud, yeah. It gets people talking. Yeah. It's, you know.
Yeah, that's how Biggie and Tupac got so big.
Yeah.
But I would hate to be the guy that had to censor Howard Stern, like pick and choose what you censor.
Dude, right.
Like,
imagine you're an attorney.
Oh, he called you pig virus.
Yeah.
The guy that yeah. picked and chose what he made it on.
He's like, you know how much I'm getting paid by the quarter hour?
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, call me a pig virus. And be like, I'm just dumping everything you say.
Oh, no, they put it over to the show, the station manager.
Oh, they did? Okay, yeah, they had an attorney.
Yeah. Attorney for a while. Okay. Yeah, then it became some other guy's job once he figured it out.
Probably. Straight out of law school, you just finished up, and they're like, we're going to put you on here. And you're just going to be the fucking censor for Howard Stern.
In 1984, Stern acquired Don Buchwald, that is his agent, who supervised Stern's new three-year contract with WNBC in early of 85. His popularity with the audience grew despite management's continual restrictions. On May 21st of 84, he made his debut on the Late Night with David Letterman show and was featured in People magazine, increasing his national exposure. In May of 1985, Stern claimed the highest ratings at WNBC in 4 years, with a 5.7% market share of the afternoon audience. In a sudden turn of events, Stern and Quivers were fired shortly before they were to go on air September 30th of 85 for what WNBC management termed conceptual differences regarding the show. Program director John Hayes explained, "Over the course of time, we made a very conscious effort to make Stern aware that certain elements of the program should be changed. I don't think it's appropriate to say what those specifics were." Stern was not told whose decision it was. In 92, he believed Thornton Bradshaw, chairman of the WNBC owner RCA, heard his bestiality dial-a-date segment that aired 10 days before his suspension and ordered the show's cancellation.
I mean, that, at this point, you know, when you're getting your numbers daily and weekly, and even if you're like, they're going to fire me, you're like, I'm just writing my own check.
What expense are we getting these ratings for?
And he's like, I'm going to write my own check. Someone's going to pick me up. Oh, someone wants these ratings.
Uh-huh. After getting fired from WNBC, Stern kept in touch with his audience by booking dates at clubs with a live stage show. He declined offers to work in L.A., including NBC's offer of $50,000 if he accepted the move, but he chose to stay in New York to kick NBC's ass. In a press conference held in October of 85, Stern announced the signing of a 5-year contract with Infinity Broadcasting worth an estimated $500,000 to host afternoons on its rock station, WXRK. Determined to beat Imus and WNBC in the ratings, Stern moved to the primetime morning slot in February of 86. So Imus was also at WNBC.
Okay, he was the morning show, and Stern was the afternoon show.
Yep.
So I'm guessing this the $500,000 was annually at that point.
Yeah, annually.
Okay, yeah.
Jeez, crushing it.
Yeah.
The show entered syndication on August 18th that year, with WYSP in Philadelphia beginning to simulcast the program. In the New York market, Stern had the highest rating morning radio program between 1994 in 2001. During Stern's 20 years at WXRK, his show was syndicated in 60 markets across North America and gained a peak audience of 20 million listeners. And this is where Howard Stern made his mark on the American public. From the beginning, the interviews and antics that Stern put on definitely drew the attention of many. In one of the first major national events that I remember, on March 3rd, 1991, Los Angeles police officers pulled over and brutally beat Rodney King while some dude recorded it all. The trial was all over the news, and when the officers were acquitted of the attacks in late April of 92, riots broke out in Los Angeles that lasted 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
In response to the riots, Howard Stern said, "I think Rodney King is a blight on society." Stern also said in his memoir, Private Parts, that the officers should have beaten King more. When questioned about his comments regarding King and race in general, Stern said, "If I was going to be truthful on the air and talk about the stuff that I knew, race would have to be included."
It's that got nothing to do with your upbringing, getting beat up in Roosevelt, does it?
Right.
Right.
But honestly, everybody, I wish you guys could have seen Buddy's face while Randy just read that.
Oh, I'm like, dude.
Like he smelled bad milk.
Yeah. Dude, making those statements against Rodney King.
Get ready.
Yeah, okay.
Because in 1992, Stern made a lewd reference to the character of Aunt Jemima, who appeared on pancake box and syrup labels for decades prior to being removed for perpetuating racist stereotypes. Now it's called something Pearl Milling Company.
And them motherfuckers are mad about it, man. Like their whole life was like, it was made brighter every day by Aunt Jemima. I'm like, right. I mean.
Don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't care at all. You can call it whatever as long as it's like cheaper than the other bottles and it doesn't taste like dog shit.
Well, Stern said at the time, "The closest I came to making love to a black one was I masturbated to a picture of Aunt Jemima on a pancake box. I did it right on her kerchief."
That last sentence is really, I think, really drives a hammer home.
Yeah. That one got the station a $600,000 fine from the FCC.
Huh.
Yep.
Yeah.
How do you price that out? Someone had to come up with the number on that.
Uh-huh.
That is definitely
damaging.
$600,000 worth
Ooh,
of bad.
That sounds good.
Yeah, let's
Send
go with that.
I'm picturing
that
a dartboard.
It can't be a round number.
They're just throwing you know, darts at a dartboard.
They were like, it can't be a round number. You can't go 500,000. It's got to sound like there's some thought involved here. So just bump it up to six. They're like, should we do like 6,000? Should we do it like Randy does with the how much to?
$625,428.
Yes, that much damage for Aunt Jemima.
That sounds about right. Stern's rise as a popular radio and television figure in 92 led to the first instance of a self-proclaimed title, King of All Media. This was initially a tongue-in-cheek jab at Michael Jackson, whom had dubbed the King of Pop. In October of 92, Stern became the first to have the number one morning radio show in New York and Los Angeles markets simultaneously.
Wow.
In the same month.
Two major markets.
Absolutely. In the same month, Stern released Butt Bongo Fiesta.
I love it.
A home video containing the highlight feature of butt bongoing, an act Stern described as frantic spanking in time to a rock record playing in the background. The video was a commercial success. Approximately 260,000 copies were sold for a gross of over $10 million.
That's somebody's listening. Their dad had a copy of Absolutely. Butt bongoing. Was he playing somebody else's butt or his own butt?
Couldn't tell you. I think it was other people's butt.
Yeah, I'm wondering, what are the mechanics of this? Like, is it one butt?
Pull
or
that
is
up,
it multiple,
Janie.
Multiple butts?
Pull that video up, Janie. I want to see butt bongo.
Right? In the early of 83, Stern signed a deal with Simon & Schuster worth around $1 million to write his first book, Private Parts. He spent the summer writing it with collaborator Larry Ratso Solomon and editor Judith Reagan, calling the experience the most challenging thing I've ever done in my career. Upon its release on October 7th of 93, Private Parts was an immediate commercial success. The entire first print of 225,000 copies sold within hours. In 5 days, became the fastest selling title in the history of Simon & Schuster.
That's huge.
Yep. Over 1 million copies were distributed after 2 weeks. Private Parts entered the New York Times bestseller list at number one and stayed on the list for 20 weeks. Stern held book signings across the country with sessions lasting as long as 7 hours. The first held in New York City was attended by an estimated 10,000 people.
Golly.
Sold a lot of books. I remember when that came out.
Oh, I do too, because I remember actually Jon Stewart had a show well before The Daily Show. It was just called The Jon Stewart Show.
Yep.
And his guest on this one particular show was the fastest reader in the world.
Okay.
And he was like, he's going to read Private Parts before he comes out, and he's going to explain it to us. And I remember, I don't know why this sticks out, but he was like, what did you think of the book? He was like, it was pretty good. You know, he starts off masturbating in his car. And I was like, and I swear, like, I don't know if, like, part of me is like, did this really happen? But I swear, I remember that.
Huh. This wasn't the Micro Machine guy.
No, he's the fastest speaker. This was the fastest reader. Yeah. I remember being jealous, too. I was like, man, I wish I could read them many books in one day. That's fucking awesome.
But an event just a few months later, in October of 93... actor Ted Danson appeared in blackface at the Friars Club during a roast of Whoopi Goldberg.
I remember that shit.
Danson was dating at the time.
Yeah.
In response, Howard Stern also appeared in blackface, allegedly in an attempt to mock Danson, whom the media widely criticized. During the sketch, Stern used the N-word roughly a dozen times, and when asked about it years later, Stern said, would I go about it the same way now? Probably not.
Yeah.
And then he tried to deny it on... Whatever
the View.
On The View. Yeah.
Stern claimed on The View that he had never used the N-word on air, prompting the footage of him in blackface to resurface.
Yeah, and wasn't Whoopi Goldberg on The View?
Yes.
Yeah. Since I was there.
Yeah.
Also, I think we're not discussing the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which was Ted Danson dating Whoopi Goldberg.
Right? How wild is that?
That was a wild
And that was when
pairing.
He was like, cheers, Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Like, just right after
Sam
Prime.
Malone.
Yeah.
Just, and I
dating
mean,
Whoopi
yeah.
Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg has never been attractive.
He didn't choose Diane. He chose Whoopi Goldberg.
He went with Whoopi Goldberg, and then decided to show up in blackface for the roast.
Oh,
yeah. I just, no. Yeah.
'90s were a little bit different, man.
That's right. Speaking of which, also in '93, us old folks remember the name Lorena Bobbitt,
the woman
who severed the penis of her abusive husband and threw it out the car window after he raped her, sparking a media frenzy in a criminal trial from which Lorena was acquitted. You guys remember the Lorena Bobbitt story?
I just explained that story to my son this weekend.
Nice.
And he was like, did he really? And I was like, oh, yeah, she cut his wiener off.
She threw it in a field or something like that?
Yeah, threw it out.
Yep.
But I also told him, because I was like, I was like, it was a big deal. He was like, well, how did you even hear about this? I was like, it was on the news everywhere, buddy.
Yeah.
Big deal. I was like, so we would sing a song that was set to the jungle, Lion in the Jungle song or whatever, which was in the bedroom, the peaceful bedroom, John Bobbitt sleeps tonight. And then it was in the kitchen, the mighty kitchen, the rain of Bobbitt grabs a knife. And then it was
a wiener whack.
And that one just leveled my son. He was like, a wiener whack. I was like, yeah,
man,
dude.
That flooded the memories back.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
I had thought about the wiener whack song.
That was the joke.
Yeah, like elementary school or middle school.
As soon as you drop wiener whack, everybody's falling out.
That's awesome. Howard Stern immediately sided with Lorena's husband, John Bobbitt. He even paid for John's enlargement surgery and had him on his show as a repeat guest. Stern repeatedly criticized Lorena Bobbitt's appearance, questioned her story about years of abuse at John's hand, and later said on air, "No creep deserves what that psycho bitch did."
He still managed to call him a creep.
Yeah.
Also, there was a movie that was put out here recently. It was a documentary called Lorena, and it was directed by Jordan Peele from Key and Peele.
Okay. Oh, from Key and Peele, yeah.
Yeah, and I watched it because it got really good reviews. It's on Amazon. And unfortunately, I saw that man's dick after it was cut off, and it made me sick.
Oh.
I could feel it.
Is it like Frankenstein?
It looked like a Vienna sausage.
And I could kind of
just, it was cut. It was a clean cut. Also, I'd be mad if they took that picture and showed it to everybody. Because, I mean, yeah, obviously, it's just, you're like, that's not a big dick, which is why he's getting
enlargement. Yeah,
but
yeah,
it was in the pool. I mean, it had to shrink up, I would imagine.
He was in the bed, yeah.
Oh, I mean, but still, after you cut it off.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I'm saying, that's the picture. Everybody's going to see your dick, and there it is.
Yeah.
And it legitimately the size of a Vienna sausage. Like, just that. It was really bad, but I was more kind of blown away that that the dude from Key and Peele made this movie.
Well, that's the thing, too. I watch a lot of Key and Peele, and I could see Jordan Peele being like, we need a real lifelike dick cut off, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make it pop.
Oh, no, it was a documentary, so it was an actual picture.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, it was this real
actual footage.
An actual picture of his dick. And honestly,
sausage.
The best part was the cops talking about when they retrieved it. And I'm talking, it's 20 years later, and these dudes cannot keep a straight face. Like, it was like right over here. It was, and I picked it up, and I was like, oh!
Yikes. However, back in 1994, Stern may have had his most heroic show, as he and Robin managed to convince a man not to jump off the George Washington Bridge. Police said Emilio Bonilla, 29 at the time, walked to the middle of the bridge, climbed over a railing, and called Stern to tell him he was going to jump into the Hudson. "Well, let me thank you for calling in," Stern told Bonilla. "I always wanted to help someone who was about to jump off a bridge." As a national radio audience listened, the two spoke for several minutes as Bonilla threatened to plunge to his most certain death about 60 stories up. Live on air, the host asked Bonilla, "Why are you killing yourself?" To which man replied, "Because life sucks sometimes, you know. I've been here before, and I come here to think, and I regret the moment that I haven't jumped earlier. I mentioned the fact that I had a movie coming out, and he would miss it if he would die," Stern said. It caused him to laugh, but it also caused him to say, "Hey, wait a second. Maybe I should stay around for the movie." At another point, Stern told Bonilla, "You may think life's a bed of roses, but it's not," and pleaded with him to get tuned into life, you know, with a hobby or something. Port Authority Police Lieutenant Stanley Bleeker, who was listening to the drama, sent officers to the scene. They found that Helen Trimble of Brooklyn, another listener, had stopped her car and wrapped Bonilla in a bear hug. They took Bonilla into custody and later helped him receive the psychiatric help he needed for his suicidal tendencies. Over the years, fans have flocked to the comments to commend the host for his quick thinking and his ability to talk Bonilla down. After watching the 29-year-old video, one YouTube user wrote, "As someone who tried to commit suicide and struggled throughout my life, Howard was great. He didn't do the cliche, 'Please don't do it, you're worth it.' He used humor to make him laugh and forget that he's even trying to jump. He may sound insensitive, but that's how comedians are, and it truly helped." Another said, "People say Howard was being insensitive to the guy. They don't know what they're talking about. As someone who's been suicidal, I can tell you he was actually perfect." A third agreed and wrote, "Howard was an incredible hero and so humble. You could tell he didn't want it to be all about him."
Yeah.
So usually on the show, we definitely ding folks if they've killed someone, but I'm not sure if anyone's gotten bonus points for helping save someone's life.
Yeah. Also, who's complaining? Look at the results. The guy didn't die.
Right.
Like, he wasn't very nice to him. Who gives a fuck? It's worked.
It worked, exactly.
Also, did anybody follow up with this guy? What did he end up doing?
You know, I almost Googled him to see, but nah.
I did. He's a rapist now. I'm just kidding.
Damn.
I'm
points
kidding.
Added back.
Yeah.
During his radio show on March 22, 1994, Stern announced his candidacy for governor of New York under the Libertarian Party ticket, challenging Mario Cuomo for re-election. Stern planned to reinstate the death penalty, remove highway tolls to improve traffic flow, and limit road work to graveyard shifts hours. Stern announced that once those three goals were accomplished, he would resign and pass the governorship to his lieutenant. At the party's nomination convention on April 23rd, Stern won the required two-thirds majority on the first ballot, receiving 287 of the 381 votes cast. The second place guy had 34 votes.
Oh, wow. What year was this?
1994.
Okay.
To place his name on the final ballot, Stern was obliged to state his home address and complete a financial disclosure form under the Ethics in Government Act. Stern applied for an injunction as he wished to avoid stating his income. The request was denied by a judge on August 2nd. Stern withdrew his candidacy in an on-air press conference 2 days later, stating, "I spent 25 hours a week telling you the most intimate details of my life. One fact I'll never reveal is how much I make and how much money I have. It's none of your business." In the gubernatorial election on November 8th, Cuomo was defeated by George Pataki, whom Stern backed. In August of 95, Pataki signed a bill that limited construction on state roads to night hours in New York City and Long Island, which was named the Howard Stern Bill, in honor of Stern originally proposing the plan. Stern has since firmly opposed the death penalty and changed his stance on that one.
So, interesting.
Yep. In April of 95, the former governor candidate made light of the recent murder of a 23-year-old Tejano singer named Selena.
Oh, man, he made a Selena joke?
Sure did.
Oh, yeah, he went hard.
Yeah, during a broadcast following Selena's death, Stern played some of her music dubbed over the sounds of gunshots.
That's just...
the day after.
Yeah.
It's not even... That's like low effort, dude. You know what I'm saying?
Stern said of Selena's work, "This music does absolutely nothing for me. Alvin and the Chipmunks have more soul. Spanish people have the worst taste in music. They have no depth." Stern went on to mock fans who publicly mourned Selena's murder. Various Latino groups denounced Stern's remarks as racist, saying his words hurt the Latino community at large. Executives at KEGL-FM in Dallas, which aired Stern's program, also released a statement distancing themselves from Stern after the station's switchboard was jammed with calls for a boycott.
Yeah, I forget exactly like what music he mocked, like the way that he made it sound, but I mean it was basically like all Mexican music sounds like da 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 da.
See, and that's the problem I have, because I'm like, there's nothing wrong with a edgy like joke like that if it feels that there's some effort put into it, not just like, hey, let's play some gunshot noise over this and say something that's just offensive for the sake of being offensive. Yeah. I'm like, then it's just not, which is why, honestly, Gilbert Gottfried's 9/11 joke was pretty good, but the timing was just, was bad.
Yeah. So speaking of the timing being off, the day after the shootings at Columbine High School in 1999,
here we go.
Howard Stern questioned why the two male shooters didn't sexually assault some of their female classmates before taking their own lives.
Damn.
Yeah.
I know it's obviously real. Do you have the quote, though?
Here we go.
Okay.
Stern said on air, "Did those kids try to have sex with any of those good-looking girls? Did they even do that? At least you're going to try to kill yourselves and kill the kids. Why wouldn't you have some sex? If I was going to kill some people, I'd try to take them out with sex."
God.
Yeah, literally the day after.
The day after.
This is 4/21/99.
There's so much wrong with it. Also, these girls were like 15 or 16, Howard.
Yeah.
Man, score's going up.
He actually does that a couple of times. Yeah. He was talking about like he was watching TV with his daughter, and his daughter was like maybe 7 or 9 at the time, and he was like, "Oh man, she's really into the Olsen twins, and let me tell you, man, they're 13, but man, they are so hot." And I was like, "Dude, what? Why are you perving out on the Olsen twins?" He's like, "I'm not saying like I want to bang them yet. I mean, they'll be 18 in a couple years, but I mean, they are hot." And then he doubled down like back when, and then like 3 years later, like that wasn't just an isolated incident. When they were 16, he was like, "Oh man, they're only 2 years off. They are so hot. I can't wait."
Yeah.
That's
bad. That's not great. And also, it's just not funny. Like, it's just not even, that's the thing. The important
joking
thing,
about pedophilia, like it's implying it.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, and for somebody that's that big, that's encouraging it. What? In a sense, that's like making it okay for your audience, and I can't get behind that.
I never listened to the show, so I never understood the draw because I didn't listen to the show. But hearing this sort of stuff, I'm like, it sounds like a lot of lazy ass jokes.
Yeah, nah. Following Stern's comments about Columbine, immediate calls for his show's cancellation proliferated. An editorial in the Denver Rocky Mountain News stated, "Let's make Howard Stern make his millions in other broadcast markets. He does not belong in Denver." The Colorado legislator also censured Stern and called for a public apology. Stern was subsequently dropped by numerous advertisers, including Geico, Priceline.com, and Mitsubishi.
And then they just waited.
That's exactly right.
Yep. That's what happens.
Yep.
They wait about 3 months till everybody forgets and moves on to the next rage-inducing fiasco, and they come right back.
That's right. In May of 99, Different Strokes star Dana Plato died only one day after appearing on The Howard Stern Show. Plato, who had lived with drug addiction for years, claimed on the show that she was sober. However, when callers accused her of being stoned, she offered a lock of her hair to Stern's team for drug testing. Stern claimed that as soon as the show ended, Plato said, "I want my hair back," and that's when I knew she was lying. That's when we knew she must have been on drugs, he said. The 34-year-old star of the 70s sitcom Different Strokes died of a drug overdose the following night after swallowing a mixture of Valium and the painkiller Lortab.
Damn, that's pretty pedestrian drugs.
Yeah, and she lived in like an RV with her boyfriend. Yeah.
That's a Thursday night for Mike.
I know. See y'all later.
Stern producer snipped a few hairs, and Plato bragged the results with Vindicator, but Stern said in a dramatic tug-of-war for the hair developed moments later after the show ended.
Oh, she was like fighting for her hair back?
She gave us the hair, then said, "No, I want it back," and Gary wouldn't give it back to her, and it was a whole big mess, Stern said. Plato grabbed the hair momentarily, but then relented and returned it, again professing her sobriety. "We still have her hair. Obviously, we don't have to test it now," Stern said. "We had a lot of deception going on, I think."
That's such a strange story, man.
Yeah, she came on the Howard Stern Show trying to, you know, I guess go on and have a public appearance. And yeah, she got
rebuild
just,
her image.
Yeah, she just got railed.
She was
by
involved in robbing a video store, too.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the whole story is really tragic, man. Not great.
Stern's bombshell came as several callers and the mother of Todd Bridges, Plato's TV co-star, blamed Stern for possibly driving her over the edge. After going on his show, maybe she thought, "I need to take a Valium to calm me down because people think I'm on drugs," Betty Bridges told the Post.
Which is the, like, use case for Valium.
Right. "If you're not taking drugs and they're saying you are, then you're tripping out. She's very sensitive." Bridges also suggested Plato turn to drugs after her mom, Kay, died in the 80s of a blood disease that resulted in the amputation of her arms and legs.
Golly.
Yeah. Stern said he didn't feel any blame, insisting Plato seemed to be enjoying herself on the show. "Maybe we give her one last good time. She thanked me afterwards. She was very sweet. Very nice," he said. Meanwhile, Todd Bridges told TV's Inside Edition, "I thought something was wrong. I was hoping I was wrong, but you could see it on Dana's face that she was hurting and she needed a lot of help."
She had to take a lot of Valium and Lortabs.
Yeah.
Had to have been a lot.
Yeah, like stomach pump amount.
Yeah. And also, Howard Stern was like, "No, everything was cool. She thanked me and everything." I was like, "You just said that she was fighting you over her lock of hair."
Yeah.
One of those is not true.
Yeah, like, how does that go? Like, "Give me my hair back. No, thanks. Yes, no, yes." All right. Well, you can keep it.
Just
I had a
it.
Really good time here, you know?
Yeah, it was a great time arm wrestling for my hair to prove I wasn't doing drugs. So weird.
It's wild.
God, that whole thing is like one giant just like fever dream. Her mom losing her arms and legs.
Yeah, it's wild. On the first Celebrity 100 list compiled by Forbes magazine in March of 99, Stern ranked at number 27 with an estimated $20 million earned that year. During the time of his CBS television show, Stern ventured into work as an executive producer through his production company for several television and film projects. On December 16th of 2000, Stern's last live radio show of the year, he announced the signing of his new contract with Infinity Broadcasting to continue his show for 5 years after 4 months of negotiations. Forbes estimated his new earnings ranged between $17 and $20 million per year for his radio show.
That's nice.
Yeah. The controversy surrounding Super Bowl, 38, halftime show, when Justin Timberlake exposed Janet Jackson's titty to the world.
Nipplegate.
Yeah.
People lost their mind over that shit.
It was live February 1st, 2004. This led to government crackdown on indecency in radio and television following a surge in audience complaints. The situation prompted tighter control over content by station managers, which made Stern feel dead creatively.
I remember that specifically. We were over at my uncle's house watching the Super Bowl, and he had a DVR. And
nice.
We like,
is this the same uncle that had the Playboy?
Yes, yes, yeah. It is. And so it happens, and we were all like,
no way they just showed her titty. He was like, we're going to rewind it and see. And we did. We rewound it. We're like, oh, my God.
She has some, like, electrical tape over that nipple.
Yeah. She had, like, a little star. Yeah. Like
a ninja star.
Yeah.
The whole thing was so strange.
It was strange.
Like, it was a wardrobe malfunction.
After Clear Channel Communications and Viacom were fined for content the FCC deemed indecent, the situation culminated on October 6, 2004, when Stern announced the signing of a 5-year deal with Sirius Satellite Radio, a subscription-based satellite radio service exempt from the FCC's broadcast regulations starting in 2006. It was a move that has been regarded as the start of a new era of radio, and Stern's final live show on the terrestrial airwaves aired on December 6, 2005.
That's right, I remember that.
Stern's first contract with Sirius was worth $500 million, a budget of $100 million a year for production, staff, and programming costs. In 2005, he formed two channels, Howard 100 and Howard 101, which launched in September and formed Howard 100 News, a team of news reporters hired to report daily stories surrounding the radio show and those associated with it. A new state-of-the-art studio and office space were constructed for the show at Sirius's headquarters in New York City. On January 9th of 06, the day of his first broadcast on Sirius, Stern and Buchwald received a total of 34.3 million shares of Sirius stock worth $218 million for exceeding agreed subscriber number targets set when the contract was signed.
He had a $500 million contract, an additional $100 million to fund shows, and then he got stock options
for $218 million
on a bonus structure.
Yep.
And that's a $1 billion deal.
A second subscriber bonus was met in January of 07, and Stern received 22 million shares of stock worth $82.9 million
Copped a $1 billion deal.
Man.
Wow.
In 2006, Time magazine included Stern on its Time 100 list, who also ranked 7th on Forbes Celebrity 100 list in 06. When Sirius merged with rival service XM Satellite Radio in 08 to form Sirius XM, the company had to pay Stern $25 million for a clause in his contract. In 2006, Stern filed for trademark of the name King of All Media. By mid-2011, Stern had reduced his time playing chess and took up photography, another one of his favorite hobbies. Among his first shoots was taking layouts for Hamptons Magazine in July that year. He continued to shoot throughout the year, including Whirl Magazine and North Shore Animal League, and established his photography company, Conlon Road Photography, a reference to the name of the road he lived on while growing up in Roosevelt. So could you imagine, like, getting picture submissions from the North Shore Animal League from Howard Stern?
When you have that type of money, it's just a fucking hobby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
God, that's so, like, I don't know. What would you guys do with a $1 billion contract? What would your hobbies be?
I would build a golf course.
You would, yeah.
I would go skiing everywhere.
Yeah.
There you go. Easy. Later in 2011, Stern announced his return to network television as a replacement for Piers Morgan as a judge on America's Got Talent for its 7th season. He had the show relocate to Radio City Music Hall in New York to cater to his radio show schedule. Even with enough money to make as many replica wigs as he could ever imagine producing, Howard Stern still wasn't done being Howard Stern. In 2008, on his show, they played edited sound bites from the audiobook version of Dolly Parton's memoir, My Life and Other Unfinished Business. The doctored audio made it sound as if Parton made racist remarks and inappropriate comments about young boys.
Okay.
Not about Dolly.
Yeah.
All right, points going up.
It's pretty funny.
When questioned about airing the spiced clips, Stern responded, "It's obviously parody and it's funny as hell." Dolly Parton said of the incident, "I have never been so shocked, hurt, and humiliated in all my life." Parton never pursued any legal action against Stern, although this possibility was widely speculated at the time.
Well, now I feel bad.
See, I don't like it when people go after Dolly.
He did hurt Dolly's feelings.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, if I was super big and they wouldn't even have to edit my shit. they would just press play on a larger audience. I feel like I would laugh about it, though. I don't know.
You know, yeah.
If it's so obvious that it's fucking...
Exactly. You know Dolly wouldn't say some shit like that.
Yeah.
And as we all know and live through, COVID changed the way the world operated. The country was shut down for a while, the masks were required for a long time, and a lot of people got sick. While COVID is definitely still around, we've seen how to live and deal with it as a society. Well, most of us, at least. For all of 20 and most of 2021, Howard and his wife, Beth, completely cut themselves off from the world. They socialized with no one, not even outside. And anyone who came to their house, work people, had to be tested and or wear hazmat suits, at least according to Howard. Despite most of his friends, including his best buddy Jimmy Kimmel, having found ways to get back to normal as the severity of the disease wanes, Howard has pretty much stayed cooped up at home. In fact, he and his wife Beth had little or to no contact to anyone outside of necessity the first couple years of COVID. Kimmel said that he and his wife Molly, in order to stay at his house, had to be tested twice. On top of it, they weren't allowed to leave Howard's house while they were there. If they did, they weren't allowed back due to the possibility of being exposed to COVID. Jimmy half-jokingly equated the experience to visiting someone in jail. Even Howard admits that he's gone overboard with this fear of reintegrating with society, like the vast majority of the world already has. Howard knows that if he does get sick, he's likely to get through, mostly because of his multiple vaccinations, but he states that the possibility of contracting long-term COVID deters him. But this isn't the whole truth. Despite numerous doctors and health professionals, including his psychiatrist, advising him to step back into the real world, Howard continues to refuse. It's true that he's told his audience, but he plans to step out again, go to a restaurant, see more friends, but he keeps delaying it. During Jimmy Kimmel's appearance on the Howard Stern Show on November 22nd of 22, the radio legend shed light on the real reason he's unable to leave his house. "For me, COVID's still going on and I haven't left my house," Howard admitted. "I can't quite figure out how to reintegrate myself." Howard continued by saying, "I've been locked up so long, I haven't gotten COVID. I'm afraid I'll be the one asshole who gets COVID and I'll die, even though people don't seem to be dying that much anymore." "You're eventually going to have to come out," Jimmy said, as Howard revealed the real reason he continues to sequester himself and his wife. "I'm at my happiest," Howard said while staying at home with his wife. "This is my dream." Howard is a notorious hermit. He loves his time alone, he loves his space, and he loves spending time with his wife and cats. COVID has allowed him to do all these things and only these things, and he claims to be comfortable in it.
I was going to say, there a lot of people discounted how great COVID was for introverts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for sure. I'm not an introvert per se, but I can become introverted, right? Like, I definitely have a social battery, and if it wears down, I sort of just, I'm like, all right, I've got to step back.
Yeah.
And the first couple weeks of COVID was pretty fucking rad. Yeah. I was like, I mean, aside from at the initial point feeling like shit was really going wrong, it was really great to not have to worry about going to work.
And like if something happened, you're just like, oh, well, it's COVID.
Exactly.
You
know, yeah.
Everybody gets it. Yeah.
And he's a billionaire at this point. Like, what does he have? I mean, he's just like, I'm going to stay at home, play with all my toys,
Howard,
hang out with my wife.
Island.
Like,
buy an island, brother, and just call it a day.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got the funds to do it, why not?
Yeah. He said, "It's so wonderful to be locked in the house, but it's unhealthy," Jimmy Kimmel countered. "Fuck it. I'm being a pussy. I know," Howard admitted, claiming that he would start venturing out of the house eventually. This has drastically changed the dynamic of his show as well, which used to thrive on behind-the-scenes office infighting and brilliant one-on-one celebrity interviews. Doing everything over Zoom simply doesn't have the same effect, despite there being moments of gold. Some of his staffers have returned to work, but listeners get none of the in-person back and forth between them. The closest thing they have is hearing stories of the staff getting together outside of work. So that whole dynamic of the in-person interview has kind of gone away, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the show has changed a lot over the years. You know, like it went from him being the shock jock for forever. Mm-hmm. And then like in around 2011 or so, around then, he started to just switch gears. And all he wanted to do was mostly like interviews with celebrities.
Yeah.
He actually even like was saying that all podcasters are losers.
That's not surprising. I mean, this is the same guy that said that the Dylan Klebold should have been banging out some of the hot chicks before he shot him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But then he starts really going in the podcaster like way of like, I don't want to be a shock jock. I just want to like interview celebrities and bring them onto my show because that's where the numbers are and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
and just this year, the first week of January, Stern did in fact contract COVID and he missed a week of work.
Yeah.
But he came back, no harm, no foul. All as well. So
that's it. I think, that, like I said, I think a lot of people just were like, you know what? I kind of like being cooped up. Yeah. A lot of people hated it. See, a lot of people hated it.
We liked it over here. And, you know, my wife works from home. We're at home a lot. Yeah. And so it, I think we rode the coattails of it a little bit longer in a sense to where, you know, it, I understand that like hard to integrate back into society part of it. It's, I think a lot of people are suffering from that.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, I had I think 2 or 3 weeks of being at home for work, and then all of a sudden I was flying all over the country nonstop to hospitals.
You were the only one on the plane.
Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, dude. I was like, I'm fucking front lines of this shit. And I didn't get it until way later.
And of course, as internet sleuths everywhere are constantly digging up footage that's biting folks in the ass everywhere, Stern was the subject of a now viral TikTok video that came out May 10th of 23. Showing him making inappropriate and offensive comments toward a slew of female guests, including Anna Nicole Smith, Lisa Marie Presley, Mariah Carey, Sofia Vergara, and Courtney Love. Anyone who's caught Stern's show over the decades would often recognize the lewd and sexually charged banter with women that would be one of his calling cards. First of all, your breasts are incredible, Stern says as one clip, a comment he made towards Mariah Carey. In other parts of the compilation video, Stern... I mean,
it's just so absurd, right? She's not even like a stripper. It's no, Mariah Carey. Mariah like, Carey. Look at the tits on Mariah Carey.
That's right. Stern calls Courtney Love's body hot, adding that he'd do a lot to that.
Gross.
In another clip, he tells Sofia Vergara that her breastfeeding her son, at which time she was 19, must have been unbelievable. And he even suggested that Anna Nicole Smith must not be aware of her weight due to her style of dress and asked her to get on a scale after he mentioned he'd like to guess her weight.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, this was like about 2002 or 2003. Yeah. She was gaining some weight. He was like, just step onto the scales and we're going to do a little over-under here in the studio. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
That's the problem too, because that's what we've talked about before, I think on the Ellen episode. Where you're like, there's a difference between being saying something that could be sort of offensive and just being mean-spirited.
Right.
And that's mean-spirited. 100% just being mean.
And he kept on going at it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just kept on, just, it was rough.
Yeah. It's not, I can't watch it. That shit makes my skin crawl when those type of interviews happen where you're just like, oh, just come out of here.
Yeah.
The video's caption reads, "This man is so disgusting. I don't even understand how he still has a job." And it has since gained more than 10,000 comments. And that, boys, is Howard Stern.
Yeah. There was also another incident where he had somebody who was a regular on the show, Debbie Tay.
I don't know who that is.
She was dubbed the lesbian space woman on the show.
All right.
And because she was, she had talked about how she was abducted by aliens and they, you know, had sex with her and all this stuff. And she was a lesbian. But you could tell she had mental issues and drug issues. Yeah. Well, she died, and the next day they had, like, I don't know, like her brother or somebody on the show that had her cremated remains. And he was like, let me see those. And so he grabs them and is like picking through them, being like, I wonder if this is her arm. I wonder, it's just like cringy stuff. That I'm like, he does some.
Every layer of that, obviously this woman is, you know, needs help, and instead he's exploiting her.
Yeah.
And then he picks through her ashes.
Yeah.
That he takes from her brother. There's nothing good about that.
Nah. Yeah. And he was like, hey, here, why don't you like chew on a little bit of this? Like picking up like a little piece of bone fragment or something. Yeah, it's a.
Great. I don't get the humor. I don't get the Howard Stern humor, man. I did like the movie Private Parts, though.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's get some final scores for Howard Stern. Buddy, what you got? Bring us home.
Yeah, for me, you know, I appreciate his career in radio. And, you know, I mean, he paved the way for a lot of people and he fought for the First Amendment. But there's a certain line that he just crosses and I just can't get behind a lot of it. And I also don't like how here at the end, he is starting to switch over and like he's just trying to stay relevant. It felt like in the 2010 through 2020 era, he was just doing everything that he could to stay relevant, where he switched gears completely and is just trying to interview people like Billy Corgan and musicians, celebrities and stuff like that. And he's like, he's not doing the shock jock thing anymore.
It's not popular anymore. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that shit.
Yeah, but... I kind of liken it in a sense to where, like, we've covered people like Justin Bieber on the show, where he got famous really young and, you know, was in front of the camera, in front of the paparazzi at 20, you know, had all of that just like, you know, none of us want to be in front of the paparazzi before our frontal lobe is fully developed.
I don't ever want to be the paparazzi.
Yeah, exactly. But Howard was doing all of this stuff, like, in his 40s and stuff. Like, he was about, like, 35, 40 in the 90s. Yeah. And so now he's just switching gears to stay relevant. I mean, I get it, but I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the stuff that he did to Anna Nicole Smith and multiple times that I've addressed this over the show. So, yeah, no, I'm not a fan. I think he crosses the line a little bit too much. I like where I had him pre-show at the actual Rose level. I think that I'm going to keep him at the 6.92. Okay. I think that that's a good spot for old Howard Stern to finish at. He didn't kill anybody. There's the one.
Dana Plato.
Yeah, Dana Plato.
You know, I don't blame him for that
either,
one.
No.
I don't blame him for that one. So
it's just a strange story all the way around.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, 6.92 is where I'm going to wrap him up.
All right, 6.92 for Buddy. Mikey, what you got, final score?
I mean, I didn't know much about him going into this. And like I said, the only real reference point was Private Parts, and I think I watched that when I was like 16, so I didn't really remember much. Plus, it's his autobiography, so of course he's going to come out looking like,
oh, of course,
you know, it's the best parts of Howard Stern,
right,
where he's
course.
Funny and he's crude, but he's also lovable. I guess he helped that guy not kill himself by jumping off a bridge, and you know, okay, that's cool. I think anybody in that situation would have done the same thing with varying degrees of success.
Sure.
He is not funny. I just don't find his humor all that. There was a couple things in there that had me laughing.
Yeah.
The butt bongo for some reason. Just I don't know why. You're just kind of like, all right, it's kind of funny. But like, yeah, with the, it's funny because I was laughing about the lesbian space lady and then you told the story and I was like, no, that's not funny anymore at all. you know, I just think he's kind of a dick.
See, that's where I look at it. He's an asshole, all right?
Yeah.
And that's what this show is. It's asshole court.
Yeah.
So he is an asshole.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't necessarily fault him for changing the format of a show. Maybe he wanted to get more interesting or change that up a little bit. And he wants to stay relevant. I mean, it's sort of sad when you see celebrities struggle to maintain relevance, like Madonna is doing right now.
Yeah.
Just horrifying. You're just like, stop. Like, you can go home. Retire.
We're good.
Yeah, if she was working at a major corporation in the 80s, they would have given her a gold watch and shoved her out the door. It's over, you know? And it feels like it should be the same way with him.
Yeah, what's the saying? You either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I feel like he's doing in this sense.
I'm kind of surprised he still has a show on.
Yeah.
I didn't know people still listen to Howard Stern.
Yep, records it out of his basement.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get paid really well.
His basement looks a little bit different than our recording studio.
It does, a little bit,
I'm going to put him at 6.5. I bumped him up for a lot of stuff, but I think, 6.5.
Okay, 6.5 for Mikey.
Randy, bring us home.
All right, so yeah, we hit on a lot of stuff that I didn't know about before I started the research for the show, or I guess it brought up a lot of the memories of hearing about the crazy shit that you would always see. But like we kind of talked about, a lot of it was just overtly kind of lazy, kind of low-hanging fruit, dumb shit.
Yeah. Intentionally like, check this out. Check out what I'm about to say.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Selena stuff with the gunshots.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You're just like, it's not even, it's just, low effort, bro.
Exactly. So, looking at where we've got, I am going to give him a final score of
6.72.
6.72? 6.72 is my final score.
For Randall.
All right. With a 6.92 from Buddy, a 6.5 from Mikey, and a 6.72 from Randy, Howard Stern's final asshole score is a 6.71.
All right, 6.71. Interesting territory. Right above our three-way tie that we've got at 6.66 between Anton LaVey, Anna Delvey, and Chevy Chase somehow.
Yes.
Then would fall Howard Stern, and right above him would be Conor McGregor at 6.74.
Oh, man. I saw a video the other day because they've redone Roadhouse.
Yep.
And Conor McGregor plays the bad guy.
Yep.
This is him at the premiere, coked up to his tits, boy.
Really?
Oh, really?
So, like, man, I watched this video. And it was like the headline was like coked out Conor McGregor at the thing. And you're like, yo, yeah, he's got that cocaine energy. It's
got
just,
that glare
in
his eyes.
He's yacked up, boy.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see that, actually.
You look it up.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can't wait to see the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
With Jake Gyllenhaal in there, too.
I'm going to watch it.
But Roadhouse is so bad, it's good.
Right.
They can't do that again. That was an accident.
I'll give him my $12 or whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not me.
I'll wait till it comes out on Netflix.
I'll watch it for free.
Yeah.
Maybe
a couple months down the road.
They better fucking pull something off because they have about 5 minutes to capture my attention. And there's just no fucking way it's going to be as badass as the original Roadhouse.
Left boot.
Yeah.
Speaking of fighting to Netflix, I heard that the, Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah. Jake Paul.
Jake Paul fight's going to be on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're going to make their money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good for them.
That'll be a fun one to watch. And speaking of fun stuff to do, check out our Patreon page.
That's right.
Patreon.com/AHC podcast. We've gotten several new Fart Circle members, and we definitely appreciate that support.
100%.
Absolutely.
We've got all our conspiracy court shows on there, all of our ad-free asshole court shows. Obviously, we tune into your comments more because you're paying us to do so. So get in and get some.
That's right. We did the last one on Prince Charles being a vampire, and the next one will be also about a royal family member.
Ooh. So stay tuned and join the patreon.com/AHC podcast page today. Thank you, as always, for your support. We'll see you next time on Asshole Court.
A wiener whack, a wiener whack.
wiener whack today.